Gentl mit der Flanke in den Strafraum auf Richtung Gieses, hier stoppt den Ball, rückt zum Tor, fällt ab auf Enzo Mio und der trifft zum 1:1 Ausgleich. Enzo Mio. Girassi. Girassi ist jetzt im Strafraum und er schießt und trifft natürlich ins Tor. Dieser Wahnsinnstyp. Ich will mal wissen, was der nimmt. Das wirklich nehme ich auch. Stenzel ist mit dem Ball. Auf Girassi und der Luft den Ball. Ins Tor zum 3:1. Unfassbar.
Welcome to Valve-based Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English-language Valve-based Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. His name is Matt. You can reach him at SailRacer. You can reach us on Twitter at ValveAmericana, online as well. Matt, let's start off with this. Kicker just stated that the Schwabians have collected at least as many points only once since the three-point rule was introduced way back in 1996, 1997. What were you doing back in 1996, 1997, the last time we had started this strong?
96, 97. I would have been in high school in 96, 97, working at a grocery store, being turbo band nerd. Yeah, just doing middle of nowhere, Northern Michigan high school stuff.
The 90s, when the Cold War was over, the 2010 started, and we had no idea. I was in the middle of accounting classes. That was my major until my professor found out that I may have possibly maybe plagiarized on a paper. And all of a sudden, you know what? I became a teacher. So those who can't do, man. Let's jump into some shout outs here. Valve Bay Bingo, we had 10 out of 25. Richard Hartman was the announcer. I thought he did an amazing job breaking down this match. We'll actually talk about him later as he got into the tactics. The pod prediction, Austin won again, Matt. He's got 23 wins, 3 up on you. You're still in second place. I'm going to give myself a shout out because I nailed the score. I said it was going to be 3-1. And then I was like, maybe I didn't nail it. Maybe I said it was going to be 3-0, but I had a few too many Carlsbergs last episode and I can't remember. And I sure as heck aren't going to go back and listen. That made me think, what is your favorite bad beer that you enjoy drinking every once in a while? Because I went with Carlsberg. I'm more of a Hams guy, you know, the Lambs, okay. Blue Waters. What is your best bad beer?
I enjoy a Labatt. I don't know if I'd call it bad beer. It's certainly not a craft or a fancy beer, but it's a cheap beer that's always in the fridge at the party store. It's a solid go-to.
Yeah, and the Canadians, they like to up the APV too, I know. So that's
they like to up lots of things. It's the metric imperial conversion rate confuses them.
The OFC Cleveland Watch Party, it is on, Matt. It's going to be this Saturday. The doors are going to open at Immigrant Sun Brewery in Lakewood at 8:30. I'll be scrambling to make sure everything's going for the match to start at 9:30. Food is at 10. Seiru's hat trick is by 11. So I'm really looking forward to that. Matt, the Valby Frauen just won a big derby match against Karlsruhe. 6-1. So congrats to them. Any shout-outs to the ladies and how well they're doing? They started 2-0 so far.
I love that the social media folks for VFA have been doing a lot more with the women's team, especially on the international account. So it's been really cool to get to see how they're doing without having to dig really into stuff. So shout out to the social media team, mm-hmm. and shout out to the ladies for their continued success.
Yeah, 2-0 in the Oberliga. So hopefully they're working on their way towards advancement. Former Valve Bayers out there. Poor Luca was subbed off at halftime for Darmstadt. Wahi Fahir scored for Elversberg in the second half of their win. Juan Pereira played all 90 minutes in a loss for Hansa Rostock. Wolverhampton had a draw. No Sasha, no fun. He didn't play. Orel Mangala played 90 minutes in a loss for Nottingham Forest and Manchester City. Liverpool Endo only got in about 2 minutes while Dino sat on the bench. Old friend Timo Baumgartel plays for Schalke in the second division. They are struggling. He just got sent to the under 23 team because he criticized how the team is doing post-match. And Sosa, he is playing for Ajax, but that game only went until about halftime because it was suspended as the fans went a little bonkers and started throwing stuff onto the pitch. Any of those names bring back some fond memories? You think any of those guys miss what's happening in Stuttgart right now?
You know, the only one I think might be really questioning his life is Borna Sosa, because not only did the Ajax game get suspended, and that was complete chaos. If anybody hasn't seen some of the videos of what went down, it's worth looking into. But also, Sven Mislintat just got dismissed. So the dude who brought him to Stuttgart and then brought him to Ajax is no longer there. So poor Borna's got to be wondering what his future is going to be right now.
And he's the center of a little bit of controversy because the transfer that brought him to Ajax is what got Sven in a little bit of trouble to begin with. Also, the fact that Ajax is like towards the bottom of the table and they've been struggling like crazy. But yeah, that was nuts trying to watch, you know, what was happening there. We'll talk about that a little bit later. OFC Fantasy, congrats to Scrub Rubs. You won again. Village Footy is in the top three here, as is SC Cool Runnings and Scrub Rubs and Koenigsfest. So congratulations to them. In the tip spiel, David, he won his first ever win, followed by Steven. So Steven and Peter from Valby Omaha are tied for first in this one. David just right behind them. Shout out to the two fake Elon Musk accounts that just started following us, Matt. I just looked at this before we got on, and there's not one, but there's two fake accounts that are following us on Twitter, which leads me to ask, hey, anything going on Blue Sky we need to know about?
So we've had a slow trickle of our Twitter friends over to the Blue Sky platform. I'm getting DMs every now and then on the Twitter box asking for invite codes. I still have some, so if anybody needs one, hit me up on the Twitter box. And it's slowly building. Right now, almost everybody I'm following over there is German language only, so I'm not getting a whole lot out of it because the Blue Sky Translate does not work very well.
We'll have to ask one of the two fake Elon followers we have to see if he's got any insight into that. Valhom asked about my shirt. I forgot to mention the shirt that I had ordered didn't show up. It got lost somehow in the processing, never was actually finalized, which to anyone who knows me, this is not a shock at all. But I did receive a 10% off coupon, so I'm eyeing up that new stress ball they have in the store there. So I'm sure I'll be getting that before Christmas is here. I love this, Matt. So the man of the match, not surprisingly, 70% of the vote from the OFC went to Seiru Garassi yet again, although somebody did give my mother a vote. So I do appreciate the OFC for shouting out old mom, you know, Mama H there.
Mama H always comes in the clutch.
Yeah, but they also split the vote between Seiru and Mom H. So sorry, Mom, you didn't get all the credit. Tim said, you know, Garassi is on another world right now. And his almost 40 years of fandom, he's never seen a striker on this kind of streak play for the guys in white and red. I was going to ask, who was your man of the match? But Peter asked a great question from Valby Omaha. Is it time for us to start the non-Garassi man of the match award? And if so, who would be your non-Seiru vote?
I love the idea of an non-Garassi man of the match. And I think mine would go to Chris Furich. Though Enzo Malo made a real strong case for himself as well. That goal that Furich scored that got called off, that should not have been for two reasons. One, because my version of the offsides rule is better than the one that they're using. And as a reminder that if any part of you is onside, all of you should be counted as onside. And two, because it was dang cool, it should have been kept. I think they should implement that rule. Something super cool should not be ruled out. And it was just, you're really irritated that called up. But the 1-2 touch between Garassi and Furich to set that goal up was just, you know, chef's kiss. Beautiful.
It would have been awesome, too, for Seiru to have two goals and two assists in that match. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was going to go Angelo Stiller, Ada Karazorp, you know, kind of the quiet leaders there. Enzo was a great choice, but no, Matt, you're wrong. It had to be Daxo because he was the only player this season to score against Valve Bay at home this year. So my man of the match obviously would have gone to Dan Axel Zagadou. Dan, congratulations on your non-Seiru man of the match award. Matt, You can't argue with that.
Your logic is sound. I find no fault in it.
Let's move on to part two of the match here. All right, so we were going up against Darmstadt, recently promoted. We have never lost to them in the Bundesliga. That streak, thankfully, has still continued. It was a classic trap game, though, Matt. It was an early start. You know, it was a Friday match. It was a hungry opponent who plays pretty dirty football, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Just they're very gritty. The pitch was super slick because of the rain, and so that did kind of take away from some of the cutting and the speed that we had. We both predicted big three-goal margins for Valpi last week. Did any of that change going for you into Friday? Because I'll tell you, it didn't for me. I was crazy confident going into this one. I haven't been this confident since we played Van Wiesbaden back in the second division and lost both of those matches. But I was just I thought everything is going our way right now. I didn't have my typical dread. I was really confident. Did any of that change for you? How were you feeling going into that Friday match?
I felt great going into the match. And I had a meeting get canceled on me. So that meant that I got to put it up on my second screen here and keep an eye on it while I kept pounding away on some work stuff. And then when the match started, they were talking about how the field was greasy and it was going fast. I thought that's got to benefit us. We're a team with a lot of speed. Darmstadt does not have a lot of speed. They're still... When you say dirty, I think of they're playing second Bundesliga football, just highly physical, not breaking the rules, but they're going to push you around. They're going to let you know they're there. And that's fine, but that's not a good recipe to keep up with Stuttgart. They'll just run around you. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling, even after the game started, I was feeling more confident than I was beforehand.
And then it's crazy. Let's just jump right into it. So immediately, things are looking okay. It doesn't look like Darmstadt has any chance to do anything at all. But then they get that lucky goal, right? They have their one play down the wing. They hit something into the box. Daxo makes his one mistake. And I'm not even going to blame him too much for it. It was just he tried to make a play. It was unlucky. So it's an own goal. 17 minutes in, we're down. We'll talk more about Daxo later, but here's what I want to kind of get into is this idea of mentality. A lot of people are saying, well, the old Valpi would have immediately caved at that point. This Valpi didn't. They kept to the plan and they kept playing. How much of that do you think is a little bit overstated, this idea of mentality? Or is that an accurate way to look at it? Because just minutes later, they did even the score up right away.
I think there's a lot to that. And I think the old Valpi, we mean like, pre-Matarazzo would have caved. The boys always stuck in and played hard under Matarazzo. We had a little bit of a letdown there in the unmentionable times in between then and now. But I think there's a lot to it because it's real easy for a team to say, oh, this is going badly and shut it down mentally, stop giving 100%, you know, not chasing after the 50-50 balls as hard and start to lose those matches. And then things start snowballing against you. And the goal went in and it felt like the entire team just sort of emotionally went, meh, that happens, and moved on with life. And there was no change to how we were playing. There was no change to anything. If anything, the boys just kind of turned it up a little bit and went, okay, we're going to get this back for Daxo.
It's interesting you mentioned that because I was going to take initially the opposite end of this argument. I think it's a little bit overstated, but I think what you said there – about how when the own goal went in, they just kind of shrugged their shoulders and like, all right, let's get about our business. I think you're 100% right on that. They're just kind of like, eh, this stuff happens. We know we can score goals. Let's go score some goals here. And maybe that's the mentality. They know they can get goals and points on the board. Whereas maybe even under Pellegrino, they knew they were going to get chances, but man, it always took a 95th minute.
That is the one big difference with the team this year than – you know, two years ago is they know they've got a weapon in Gerasi that's going to put balls in the net. They know that he's going to create opportunities for the rest of the attackers. And so if they allow one, they're probably going to get two. So that's okay. Yeah. Now, it'd be interesting to see, I hope we don't, but it would be interesting to see what happened to the team if we went down 2-0 early, or if we're behind 3-0 at halftime, if they started to go, whoa, this is a big mountain to climb. I'm hopeful we don't find that out. But I feel like at this point they'd go, all right, well, this is, it got harder, but that doesn't mean we stop.
Yeah, you exude a level of confidence that I don't think we've seen since, you know, we've been
totally
in this club. And one of the things I want to dive into, I thought Richard Hartman did a fantastic job of this, of talking tactics about the match. And so I'm going to throw a couple things at you that they mentioned, and let's just break this down a little bit and get some of your insight into it. So one thing they said is you could see how the wingers were moving inside to allow the fullbacks to go deep. And we saw this with Daxo and Ito were up front numerous times where they were the lead guys. One of the other things they said is because Ito is a left back who can also play center back, that allows them to play three at the back a lot. So you can see Stenzel moving up. And there was a lot of times during this match where I think Valpi knew they were the stronger team and they only played three guys at the back. And Ito gives them a little bit of that flexibility. They mentioned a lot about link-up play, which I'm going to need your help with because I really don't understand what that means at all. And then one of the things I really liked that they said, which goes to why I was going to possibly vote for Stiller, is how he was the engine that kept the game going. And they didn't even really mention him until the 70th minute. But both he and Otto were really firing on all pins in that backfield with a lot of quick passes, one-touch passes, to keep things going forward and not bogging down. So I threw kind of four general topics at you. Which one of those do you think sticks out the most to you, or that you can explain to me like I'm a four-year-old so I can actually understand?
So I think let's talk about Stiller a little bit, because I think he's really interesting, and he's a guy I need to watch more closely, and I just haven't yet. Girassi's up front creating so much fun. I like to pick players a lot, like linebackers when you're watching an American football game, and just watch those guys and see what they're doing. Don't pay attention to the ball. And Stiller, I think, would be a great person to do that with, because I feel like he's got smart positioning, and when he does have the ball, he's making good movements, but it's not necessarily flashy stuff. And it reminds me a little bit of what we used to praise Aurel Mangala for a lot, of being the engine in the midfield that keeps it moving. And it's the same with this link up play. So what they're talking about with that is defense gets the ball, make a recovery. You have to do something with it. And so your options are either hoof it down the field as far as you can, or make a pass to somebody. And Stiller's putting himself in positions, and Terrazor has been doing a really good job of this as well, where they're back far enough that the defense can make a short pass to them, but they're also not so far back that they're clogging up the defensive lanes. So they're serving as the conduit between the defense and the midfield.
Okay.
And the attacking midfield. And so that's what you want out of Stiller and Carrizo. When the other team has the ball, they want to be further back, focusing on the defense, supporting our back four. But when we win the ball, they need to shift and start moving forward and getting into open spaces to create passing opportunities for Daxo, Anton, Stenzel, and Ito. And so I think Stiller and Carrizo are both doing a good job of that. I think Stiller is doing a really, really good job of that. And that's some of the reason we're seeing such fluid counterattacks and such smooth ball movement through the midfield. And it's smooth enough that I think a lot of us aren't even noticing it. And like, I'm somebody who looks for this stuff and I'm not noticing it.
No,
you're just right. The guys up front are too fun.
It's funny because Ito and Stiller from the distance almost look very similar in the style that they play. And Ito is the more offensive player, which is funny because he's, you know, the left back there. But I've been watching because they've been wins, so it's fun to rewatch the matches. And when you watch the game in real time, you're not really paying attention to Angelo at all. But when you pay attention to him, like you said, you can really see how he's really directing a lot of the orchestra, so to speak, in the back. And this idea of the link-up play that you said, that makes sense, because the person that I've really been impressed with is Angelo, obviously, but Ada Carrizo has really improved over the course of his being here, where when he started, I just thought he was a classic defensive midfielder, break things up, slow things down. Okay, let's start over. But yeah, he's really transitioning into a guy who does that, but is also starting booting up the offense and doing those quick passes. On Seyru's goal, he had a great back pass, and then he had a one touch to Stenzel, and Stenzel got the ball to Seyru in the box. I mean, Ada did a lot of the link up play, you know, there. So it was just really interesting to listen to Hartman break down kind of the tactics of what this team is trying to do, because watching Furich go inside and then Stenzel go outside, one of the tough decisions that Honus is going to have is once Josh Evagnemite does come back and once Wu Yang comes back. I mean, these guys are playing on all cylinders right now. It's a good problem to have.
I think Hartman made some really great points, and I agree with you completely. He was fantastic on the broadcast, really super informative. But I think the interesting thing for the offense to me right now is what the defense is doing with Ito and Daxo and Anton and Stenzel all taking their turns going forward, as you mentioned. It just, it speaks to how much trust they have in Karazor and Schiller to get back. And even like there were some plays where Silas and Gerasi were tracking back, and they were the first guys back on attackers while the defense was sort of backing up and trying to slow things down. So it's really great team play. It's fun to watch. It's really exciting to see. And it's nice that we've got players like Ito who are so flexible that they can run up and attack 1 minute and then be back defending the next. And there's not really a whole lot of drop off.
Yeah, let's talk about the thing that gets us all excited, which is the offense here. And that goes, ends, starts with Seiru. But the first goal is actually Enzo. And one of the things that I loved was that he was so happy. His body control is amazing. His hold-up play, I thought, you know, Sasha Kalajic's hold-up play was awesome, and it was. But Seiru is just at a different level right now. And so he got the ball, and he was able to kind of pass it back to Enzo. And Enzo just did a one touch into the goal there. What I loved was how happy Seiru was. I almost thought he was going to get a yellow card because after that goal went in, he booted it into the stands. But then how Enzo didn't really even celebrate. He just kind of congratulated Seiru or thanked Seiru for the pass. And then going back to what you talked about mentality, they just kind of got back into business. All we did was we evened it up. We're not in the lead. Let's not go crazy. And then the next goal that Seiru had, Ito had a real nice long switch to Stenzel. Stenzel, who's playing great, had a pass to Chris. Chris got to Seiru, and Seiru just hit this. I don't know what the XG on that shot was that he had his second one, but it was just a rocket. At that point, Matt, he was 9 for 9 goals on target or shots on target that turned into goals. It wasn't until 38 minutes and 30 seconds into this match where he had his first shot on target that didn't go in. So let's just celebrate this Seiru moment for a bit. That is an incredible run of form. 9 for 9, and it wasn't until the first half was almost over to where your first shot on target was actually saved.
He's just unreal, and I'm convinced, and I won't hear arguments against it, that if the net hadn't been there, his shot would still be going up. And then we'll be on its way to the moon. That was just an absolute laser beam into the corner of the net. And then to follow that up with the third goal, where he did that cheeky little chip shot over the goalkeeper, just to have the mentality.
Gorgeous.
To not, I'm a guy, I get in front of net like that, and I'm like, I'm going to hit this as hard as I can and hope. And Drossi's like, nah, I got this. Mic drop. Chip shot over the keeper, walks off full of swagger, full of confidence. I mean, when was the last time we saw a Falcao Bay player with this kind of positive attitude and you can't stop me and we both know it sort of just dripping from them? It's amazing.
Well, against the match against Mainz, we didn't mention it, but he scored with his left foot, he scored with his right foot, he scored with his head. In this match, he scored on a rocket and then he scored with touch. It's just his confidence level is at an all-time high. It's just, it's crazy to watch what he's doing. And it's thankfully he scored that goal, because there was tons of missed chances in that second half. He had one. There was the offside one to Chris that you mentioned earlier. Enzo Undav was looking really good. So finally he was able to put that one away. So I want to kind of pivot a little bit and talk about the defense and talk about Daxo. We joked about him earlier. He had some good, he had some bad. In the 55th minute, it was kind of this classic. He was a little too slow, which was good because he whiffed on what he was trying to do. So a potential penalty kick didn't happen. But he played, I love him on crosses. I love him on their corner kicks. He's such a presence. Waldy completely neutralized poor Luca Pfeiffer to the point where Luca was pulled at halftime. Silas, like you said, his body language was much better this match, I thought. He had a great play where he raced back on defense to get the ball and force a corner on what was a kind of a breakaway in a dangerous position. Alex didn't have much to do. He did have one little fluff in the 85th minute, but he had a real nice save in the 56th minute. He was just, his level of aggressiveness is what I really like compared to what we've seen, you know, the last couple of years. And Stenzel is just playing so well. Like I mentioned, when Joshua comes back and Joshua's a better player, it's going to be tough to bench Pascal because he's just one of those guys who's making things run. So the defense as a whole is just looking really strong so far. And mind you, we've only played one really good team and they beat us, you know, 4-1 or whatever. Yeah. But at this point, like you mentioned, they seem to be the sum of the parts, man. They're just looking really strong. So any thoughts on any of those guys we just mentioned?
The unit as a whole is playing really, really well together. And that's something we've been talking about for a few years now, that the team is just having a hard time getting going in defense because we haven't had a consistent lineup back there. And so we're with the fourth game running that we've had the same back for. They played together last season. This is starting to pay off of the familiarity, the comfort with each other, the confidence in each other. It's huge. And I think Anton's a big, big part of that. He's pretty clearly the anchor of that unit. But we're seeing guys, you know, Daxel had his Daxel moment, but by and large, he's playing really well. I don't remember a time when Pascal Stenzel was this consistently quietly effective. And that's what we want out of him. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I kind of want to dive into that before we wrap this segment up. As Richard Hartman mentioned about how, and we'll talk about Sven Mislintat here in another segment, about how this team was so young, and they still are pretty young, but how they're finally reaping the benefits of that youth. And these players are turning into mature, quality players. So whether it's Stenzel, whether it's Otta, these guys are finally maturing. And he gave Sven a lot of credit. It was kind of interesting that now Volgemut is benefiting from that. And as much as we love Sven, it is interesting. You know, Volgemut did bring in some more experienced guys that kind of might be balance the spreadsheet a little bit. I don't know exactly what's the reason. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, and the Browns are finally good after a million years, right, in the NFL. And our defense was horrid last year, and it's really good this year. And people here are trying to figure out how. What was it as simple as they just got a new coach and he just simplified things? So is it as simple as Honus came in and just simplified things? I'm really curious as to what Honus and his staff were able to do, or is it just a combination of maturity and experience, and these guys have been through the Bundesliga wars and they know what to do at this point, and that's why things are clicking? Because this isn't the same team that we've seen in the last couple of years.
I mean, we can only guess, really, because we're so far on the outside. But I gotta assume it's a combination of factors, that the guys are more comfortable, they're older and wiser, have been through it. And I think it's pretty clear something Honus is doing is speaking to these guys, because we saw it almost immediately when he took over that there was less chaos on the field, less insanity, less playing guys out of position, which just not putting Anton at right back has made a big difference. And only one guy to credit for that move. So I think the move to get some more senior players on the team, I think, was smart. I liked Sven's vision of moving back to a Jungenwald sort of roots of Stuttgart, but you've got to have a little balance of that with guys who have been there before. And we saw that when we lost Castro, that all of a sudden stuff got a little shaky. And as much as I was down on Castro when he was on the squad, I will readily admit he was a big loss when he left us.
Yeah, it's wild what's happening right now, because as we wrap this up, the final thoughts in reality. So Honus has only lost two Bundesliga matches. He's got a 46-23 goal difference at this point, which is nuts. And here's what's crazy. Matt, usually when we look at the rest of the table, we're looking at the bottom teams. I'm actually starting to look at the top up the teams. Now, it helps because Bayern played Bochum, so I have both things to look at. Bayern blew out Bochum 7-0 here. Dortmund eked out a win over Wolfsburg. Leipzig did the same thing over Gladbach. Hoffenheim, who was on a tear as well, beat up on Union Berlin, who's kind of scuffling a bit. And then Leverkusen beat up on Heidenheim. So I'm actually paying a little bit more attention to those top nine teams than I usually am the bottom nine teams. This is wild. This is crazy. We are in third place on the table after four matches. We've got 12 points. I can't even remember how many games it took us last season to get up to 12 points. We're beating the teams we should. It's really as simple as that. The last time we were this good, we were beating those bottom nine teams. And so far, knock on wood, Cologne, you're coming up. That's what we've been doing. Any final thoughts on the craziness that is seeing the beautiful Valpe logo right up there, third place, right at the top?
I love seeing our crest up near the top. I especially love seeing it above RB Leipzig. Because just screw the whole Red Bull enterprise. I watch F1 too, and man, are they a downer in F1. But I don't know what to do with my hands, I guess. this is neat. It's exciting. It's been a long time coming. And it's fun to see such a, like, this is a very easy team to root for. It's got a lot of very likable players, a lot of try-hard players, and then it's got this unassuming superstar in Seru Girassi who came out of nowhere. And it's just, it's not like we paid a crap load of money to get everybody and their brother from the English league and said, now we're going. This was built and by design, and it's awesome to see it paying off.
Yeah, I think you can almost see a connection from the Pellegrino era to the Honus era, right? What Sven was doing to where Fabian Vogelmuth is at. And so I do think those of us who really enjoyed what Sven and Reno brought can find something in this club that we're liking right now. Find something in the way they play and the personalities they have. And so it's been a fun ride. And as Seru said after the match against Mainz, long may it continue, because it's been a lot of fun right now. So why don't we do this? Why don't we head into part three, some news headlines and some questions?
Sounds good.
All right, let's move into part three. Matt, I struggled with the segue into this one because I really like how we're going to start this. Our first issue in news and headlines are some ratings. So the Bundesliga came out with their beer and brat ratings. And what this is it combines the price of a beer and a brat and tells you who, you know, has the cheapest and the most expensive. We were tied for fourth highest with Hoffenheim, as it turns out. Bayern was the most expensive at 10.5 euros. We, if you want a beer and a brat at a Valpe match, it's 9.20 euros, just like Hoffenheim. Union Berlin was the cheapest at 7.5 euros. So I don't know what that says, but, you know, we're, I guess, up with the big boys there. And then when it comes to fan shop sustainability, so there was a ranking to figure out which fan shops had the most sustainably produced products in their online shops. We were in second place behind your favorite club, Union Berlin. So what do you think? Two rankings there were pretty expensive to buy a beer and a brat, but when it comes to clothes, if they show up, they're healthy for the environment. So thoughts? They're
well made using recycled material, which we love to see. The beer and brat price is a little bit disappointing, but not wholly unexpected given the financial situation the club has been in recently and all the renovations they're doing on the stadium. There's a bit of a gap to make up in what they've spent versus what they've brought in from things like transfers. So I get it. And, you know, 9.20, still 10 bucks for a beer and a brat. That's not terrible. 10 euro. You go to a professional sporting event in the US, like, you're going to drop 12 to 14 bucks for a beer alone. So
Yeah.
Like this, I don't hate it. I think it's really cool that they did it. And I'm really very impressed that we've got the second most sustainable fan shop in the league. That's pretty awesome.
You know what, though? There is one thing that we came in first place. So Frank Schmidt is the coach for Heidenheim. And Heidenheim is newly promoted to the Bundesliga. He has been coach for over 5,850 days, which is the longest ever in the history of the Bundesliga. The most coaches during that tenure, Matt, drumroll please, who do you think it was?
Palace.
Not even close to anybody else. We had 22 coaches over that tenure. Mm. Second place was Bochum at 17. Bochum, you think you can hang with us? Come on now. What are your beer and brat prices, I wonder? But yes.
Bochum, until you get serious about unnecessary coach staffing, stackings, you're never going to play with the big boys.
And I'm pretty sure two of those coaches, was it Armin Vey and, oh gosh, three, Hugh Stevens and Bruno Labbadia were all retread. So maybe we were just trying to pad our numbers at some point to lead in that number. Speaking of numbers, we got some money here. So we got the Porsche money. So came out that the Porsche deal with Fabi, if you don't remember this, they have signed up to be one of the major sponsors of the club. It's almost finalized. So we're going to get about $20 million in 2023, $20 million in 2024, but most of that is going to go towards debts and construction, like you alluded to, not to actually purchasing players. They will eventually, most likely, have about an 11% stake in the club, which is exactly what Mercedes has, and Yako has about 1.5%. The other issue with money is fines. Valby was fined $6,000 for pyros during the Pokal match and $10,000 for starting match day one almost 3 minutes late. So if you start a match anywhere from 30 to 120 seconds late, there's a warning. But then up to the third violation, it could get up to 15,000 euro. Bayern was also docked for this. And then finally, Sven, he is in trouble because he was somehow connected to the agency that dealt with the Borna Sosa transfer from Stuttgart to Ajax. And that's what started a lot of the investigation. Like we said, if you look up Ajax's results on the table, they are nowhere near where that club historically is at. They are struggling. So I'm guessing it was a combination of the results plus perhaps this issue with Borna. He was cooperating 100%. From what I've read, it sounds like a lot of these people have investments in different agencies, so it wasn't intentional. We obviously have a soft spot for Sven, so we hope it all ends up well for him. But of all those stories with money, Porsche, the fines, and Sven, which one sticks out to you?
The Porsche one and the fact that they're going to have an 11% stake in the club, I think is really interesting and speaks to not only them using us as a stepping stone for a little bit of period, but a legitimate long-term investment and involvement with the team, which is great. I mean, the Porsche crest has part of the Stuttgart symbolism on it. It looks like the Stuttgart football club crest a little bit. And so I've decided that I need a Porsche. And so if anybody has a 911, they'd like to sell me for very cheap, somewhere near the Midwest region, needs to run good, be reliable, and most importantly, look cool. I'm now in the market because I got to support the team just like the Mercedes I never bought.
Well, it's yeah, if you join our Patreon account, you can.
The Mislintat thing is really curious. Like, I don't really know what to make of that, to be honest.
It's bizarre. So there's been some reports. He burned out at Arsenal. He burned out at Stuttgart. He burned out at Ajax. All of those relatively quickly, especially the Ajax one is crazy. He's only been there since the summer. There's been some rumors about personality issues and things like that. It's bizarre because when he went to Ajax, I thought, well, yeah, this makes 100% sense. He had success with Dortmund. I know Arsenal supporters weren't super keen on him, but most Stuttgart supporters really liked him. I know there is a vocal camp out there that says, listen, we were relegated almost twice while he was there. And I would say, okay, we were relegated once while he was there. I think the second time there's a lot of factors that rolled into that one. But it's just bizarre because I think Tim said it pretty well on Twitter. I don't 100% agree, but a club like Ajax, I don't know if you can go the Stuttgart route, which is why I'm kind of sad it didn't work out at Stuttgart, because I think it was perfect. His idea of youth, I think, just fit with the Jungenvild approach here. I do know that Ajax had two of their best players taken at the last minute from a Premier League team. So that's got to hurt. It's a quick fall. It's a quick fall from grace.
I feel like, so I thought it was a great move for him going to Ajax, because I feel like everything I know about Ajax is from young players who used to play at Ajax. And that's in my head, at least, the reputation of the club is that they get these young guys from out of nowhere, they develop them, and then they sell them off. And so Sven and his focus on young up-and-coming players with unrealized potential seemed like a perfect fit there. And it almost feels like he hit a perfect storm of the worst possible time to go there. And the current fortunes of the club, combined with losing those two players, combined with his financial tie-ins. So some self-inflicted wounds here. Let's not completely absolve him of any wrongdoing. It was almost designed for him to fail, but he couldn't have known that when he went. So that's, I don't know, there's going to be stories written about that at the end of the season, I'm sure, that dive a little bit more into it. And I hope I remember to look them up, because I'm sure they'll be fascinating.
I think it's going to be interesting at some point if this good run of form continues for Valpe. I think we will look into this at some point, because I do think there's a lot to be said for there. You see this all the time in American sports. I'm assuming it's the same thing in the Bundesliga, where you have one particular staff that gets the players, but then you have another staff that comes in that is able to mold them into a successful unit. And it is really too early to say that's what's happening here. That's what I hope is happening here. But I do think Hartman was right in the broadcast that a lot of the guys that Sven signed are either bringing big income into the club or performing well for the club. And I know you can say, well, Al Gudouy didn't, Luca Pfeiffer didn't, Tanguy Koulibaly doesn't have a club. Okay, that's fine. But you're not going to hit the lottery every single time. I think the amount of players that hit, I think somebody said it on Twitter too, is I 100% agree. I think 9 or 8 of the 11 starters are from that regime. So I will be really interested if this run of form continues to kind of try to pick that apart. Is like, were all the players that Pellegrino and Sven got, they found talent, but they weren't able to mold it into a particular winning style. And that's where Volgemut and Honus came in, and they were able to do that. I mean, we'll never know, but it's going to be crazy interesting if this keeps up.
Yeah, it'll be neat to look back in 5 years and see where things are at. When you're playing the Sven Mislintat game, you're buying lottery tickets and you're hoping that 1 out of 10, let's say, to make up numbers, hits. And I'm sure Sven had some sort of formula put together of, I need this level of success of buying these unproven young players and turning them for huge profits. But if you buy 10 young players for $1 million a piece, you only need one of them to hit for 20 million, and you've doubled your investment on that. So I get it. And there's always going to be people knocking, say, well, Al Gudouy didn't turn out. Koulibaly didn't turn out. No, they didn't. But Borna Sosa turned a nice profit. Sasa Kalajic turned a nice profit. Like, there are some, if we put the balance sheet together, I think we'd be pretty well in the black on how this worked out. So I don't know about what was the turning point to get these guys working through. I feel like it's unfair to judge Matarazzo's full run on him, because there was COVID.
Yeah.
There were, you know, unprecedented levels of injury and illness, and just like, you can't, those almost were pretend. Like the 2020-2021 season was almost a pretend season. Like, what do you do with that information? I don't know what to take out of it. So I think stability is playing a huge part. I think Honus is a chill guy who is able to talk to the players on a level that they understand and get the most out of them. I think Matarazzo is showing that he can do that too in Hoffenheim, which was also a club in complete chaos. So
great point.
Mm-hmm. Like it feels like it's more of a timing issue than anything.
Yeah, I wish, and again, we'll never know, but if Rob says this all the time, that if we would have kept some of those key players from Nico Gonzalez or Gregor Kobel, what would this club have looked like with Sven and Pellegrino? I mean, at some point, talent does matter. So we'll never really know, but hopefully this run of form continues so we can kind of dive into those hypotheticals, you know, quite a bit. So let's dive into some more hypotheticals. We got some questions and comments. So one of the questions the OFC asked was, Enzo Milo was everywhere and set up so much of that game. Are we worried with the goal scoring of Guirassy that other players aren't being highlighted as much as they should be? I'm going to take this one first. I don't think so. I think winning cures everything. And this club is winning, so everybody's happy. Silas looked happy last match. Everybody's happy. And to Seiru's credit, he said this after the match, quote, I'm very happy about my goals. I try to help my team. We won and are really happy. I have to thank my teammates. They know my runs and they set up the goals for me, end quote. And I think that's what they mentioned during the broadcast, is that this club is doing everything they can to highlight Seiru Guirassy as a star. And I don't think that's lost on him. And I think he's giving credit where credit is due. And I go back to what I said earlier, is that when Enzo scored that goal, Seiru looked happier than anybody else out there as he booted that thing away. So I don't think there's a jealousy issue at this point. I'm hoping, we did talk about last week how Silas seemed to be a little bent that he wasn't getting, you know, more opportunities or shots, but that's my take. I think everybody's happy as long as we're getting 3 points on the scoreboard. What do you think?
I'm with you. And I think it helps a lot that Guirassy has a we, not me attitude. If he was scoring a goal and then running away from everybody and pointing at the name on the back of his shirt, you know, the lower name, I guess, now that our names are in the tramp stamp spot, instead of, you know, hugging his teammates and jumping around, if he wasn't celebrating as much when his teammates score as he does when he scores, it'd be a different conversation. But he's the perfect superstar for this team right now. And he's playing like a superstar. And we're fortunate that he sees the reality that I'm not doing this all by myself, and that he calls his teammates out on it. And it's just, I don't know, I keep saying that it's awesome and it's so much fun and like I need a thesaurus, but it is, it's just, this is fantastic. It's what we've been dreaming for a long time.
And that leads us to the next question, which is something every week we seem to get. So Valham sent this in, is Seiru leaving in January or after the season? I hate this question. I think we just need to enjoy him being here. As Tim said, this is the best striker he's seen in 40 years over the course of a 4 or 5 game run. I'm just having fun being a supporter at this point when it hasn't been that much fun the last 2 years. We're 96 episodes into this nonsense, and well, there's been 94 episodes of it, and there's only been, you know, two. So what I like about what Valham did ask, though, is are you going to pay attention to the Africa Cup that takes place in December and January? Because he will be playing in that, and that's going to be a rough stretch for us because he's going to be representing his country, and he won't be there for us. So you going to pay attention to how he's doing in Africa? And what are your thoughts on the weekly, hey, where's Seiru going status?
I don't like the weekly, hey, where's Seiru going conversations, because I don't like to think about the fact that he's probably not going to be here one day. I do. We've talked about it before. I think it's reasonable to think that he might stick around for a little while because he's found a level of comfort. And if he feels really good and he feels like he's being compensated adequately, there's a lot less reason to leave and go play for another team where it might all end. And this is a guy who's been through it where it was not good before.
Right.
And so he might just be counting his lucky stars right now and be happy to be where it is. I don't know that that's the case. I'm really hopeful it is. hope's not a strategy, though, so we'll see how that works out for me. On the Africa Cup of Nations, that's not something I usually pay a ton of attention to. Sadio Mane, who was playing for Bayern for a little while, used to play for Southampton, my English side piece. and was one of my all-time favorite Southampton players. So I was like to check in when he was playing for Saints to see how he was doing. I don't know how many games I'll get to take in, but I'll definitely be keeping track of his success.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he does there, because that'll be a weird stretch for us, because in December, January, he might be gone. But I love this question from I Am Rob Holloway. It's like, still waiting for the German press to mention Guirassy and stop obsessing over Harry Kane. I think they are starting to mention him, but Rob, I'll agree with you. Matt, I'm in this weird place I've never been, to where I'm actually paying attention to Bayern, and I'm starting to get bent and upset at what Bayern are doing. And so Harry Kane had a hat trick this weekend, and one of the goals is a penalty kick. And I think two or three of his goals are penalty kicks. And so as a Homer supporter, I started to be like, well, sure, he's got five or seven goals because they're penalty kicks. Of course, Bayern's setting him up to win, you know, the goal scoring, you know, record for the award for the season. And now I'm in this weird place where I think I'm finally becoming German, where I'm disliking Bayern irrationally because my guy might have a chance at this thing. So I don't think the German press is ignoring Seyrouz. I mean, Harry Kane's an easy story, but I love how I am now starting to get more engaged in this because we have a guy who is actually at this point better than Harry Kane.
I kind of love that they're ignoring him, because I think we have a potential to paint a narrative. So let's say they continue to ignore him, and at the midpoint, the break of the season, they've got to be talking about something. And what are they going to be talking about? Harry Kane and Bayern. And how awesome would it be if every time they brought him up, they had to say, he's the second leading goal scorer in the league. And they can spend all the time they want to talking about him and spill as much ink as they want. But if our boy is still scoring more goals, the numbers don't lie. And there's nothing they can do to hide the fact that Seyrouz has been unfreaking real. And we've seen some stuff. The VfB site itself had a really nice piece on him. Kicker had a nice little write-up on him. 11 Freunde had a nice write-up on him. So he's getting some, from some of the niche football-specific publications, he's getting some coverage. People who are football fans, who know the sport, who follow the sport closely, they know what's going on. Let the mainstream media run away with their little narrative and try and cash on having an English superstar playing for Bavaria's biggest team. We know who we'd rather have on our team right now, and it's 100% Seyrouz Guirassy.
What I love, and this goes back to Valham's question, is you never know, but from what the reports are, Seyrouz is a very devout guy. He's a family guy. I love this story they mentioned on the broadcast that he took his children and his family to Schwabenland, which is a theme park in Stuttgart. And I'm just like, I love this idea of Schwabenland. I not that he went there, but I was like, I'd like to take my kids to Schwabenland. I wonder.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, a lot of penny pinching, you know, people there not wanting to spend money on either, whatever it may be. But, you know, I love the fact we're in the conversation that he's doing all this stuff. The guy who is having as much success as he is, but not on the pitch, is Sebastian Hoeneß. So the question that was asked is, will he be poached at some point? And who put FIFA career mode setting on easy for this club right now? I don't think Sebastian's going to be poached. I think he lasted 2 years at Hoffenheim. He obviously has a name that is well known in Germany, as his uncle is, you know, the CEO of Bayern. He lasted 2 years at Hoffenheim. His record as a manager, he tends to go in streaks. Start strong, but then 3-4 losses in a row, then 2-3 wins in a row. Now, Hoffenheim had way different expectations than Stuttgart did. You know, back then, Hoffenheim was playing in Europa League, I believe, and they did not qualify in the top 6 or 7 his second year, and they dismissed him after 2 seasons. So I don't think he's going to be poached immediately. I do think, like, let's say the dream season, we finished in the top 5 or 6. I think he would definitely be there the next season with this club. But if they had 2 seasons in a row where they're in the top 7, okay, at that point, we're talking.
Yeah, I think people are going to be hesitant to try and poach him. Just wondering, is this a flash in the pan? Is it just like he got lucky and fell into something at the right time? And maybe, you know, we don't know yet. I'm feeling like he's probably a real solid coach, and I think he's done a heck of a turnaround job. He might get the reputation of just being a firefighter, that he's the guy you bring in to rescue your club from relegation, and then he's not a long-term solution. But there's only so many clubs that look for firefighters every year. And there's more proven bigger names that will get fan bases more excited than the guy who turned Stuttgart around for half a season. So I think we're safe with him for a little while. I'm hopeful he sticks around and continues to have this level of success. And if he does, it's reasonable to think that the club can continue to pay him well and hold off suitors, because we'll be doing better. We'll bring in more money. You know, that's the circle of life. We got to wait and see, though. I'm not worried about Honus getting poached yet. I have a lot bigger worries in my head around this team right now.
I know. It is funny how we're third place on the table, 12 points, best season since 1996, and we're still like, yeah.
How can the bottom fall out?
Let's still be careful here. But let's be optimistic just for a second. This is a good question here from Topher. He asks, you know, Silas, Chris, and Golassi, I like that, are proving to be a fantastic attack trio. The defense has had but a single hiccup, but they've maintained their composure, and Honus is building a fantastic track record. I'm letting my unbridled optimism take over. We're gunning for Europe. So, Matt, how far do you think this club can go? I mean, to qualify for Champions League, you got to be in the top four, and I'm going to kick myself in the behind for even saying that right now. Europa League is 5-6, I believe, and then the Europa Conference is 7. Before the season, you and I were both like, you know what? 13th would be fantastic. Yeah. How far do you think this – I mean – what do you think? Is top seven a possibility at this point?
Dare we dream, Travis?
Oh my God.
That's all I got to ask. Dare we dream? I don't know. The way they're playing right now, they look unstoppable. But also, we've played some bad teams. Mm-hmm. So, you know, apply appropriate amounts of salt. I'll feel a lot better about having some idea of what this team's going to look like long term in a month, once we've had a little bit more of the schedule behind us. But I feel like we've got the talent level, and that they're organized in a way that, yeah, they could be a top seven team. I almost don't want it, because I feel like jumping to Germany or to Europe after the years that we've had would be a little too much. Mm-hmm. And that we might be, you know, we've talked about how we're thin. Our roster is not super deep. That might crush us. So I would be thrilled if we finished just outside of European competition, had an off season to build the team up a little bit, and then came back at it. We're playing in Europa League or Champions League next year. That'd be amazing. Or the year after, rather.
I don't know. Sign me up. I'm ready. I'm ready for it. Now, I will say this. If it's Europa Conference League, I don't know. There's not a lot of money there, and the roster is kind of there. But if it's Europa League, Travis is all in at that point. I think it'd be a lot of fun for this club to do that. But this does get to the question that somebody asked. Can Zagadou defend against top teams to keep us in the top six? So the roster is pretty thin. We talked about a while ago how we don't have a lot of center backs. Do you think Daxo can keep playing this well? Because I don't know. I mean, I think he's really good at some things, but I think he's pretty weak at some other things. The schedule coming up is really bizarre, because we have Cologne, then we've got Wolfsburg, the international break. Then you've got Union Berlin, that is scuffling, Hoffenheim, who is basically the same as us right now, Heidenheim, so the schedule is kind of balanced in a way to where you play kind of a team you think you should be, then a team you're like, I don't know. I don't know. I want to think Dan Axel can, but I don't know.
I am skeptical because of his one colossal mistake a game. And when you get to the level of teams you're playing in Europa League, mistakes are less forgivable, I guess. You're more likely to be punished for making the kind of mistake Daxo tends to make. I think he relies on his athleticism a lot to make up for some of the mental mistakes that he makes while he's on the field. And that's fine right now. I think he'd be okay in Europa League, but I would be the most nervous about him on our defense.
I like what he does in the back, where he just clears the ball. If there's stress out there, his main go-to move is just to kick it out of bounds, reset the play, go to his strength, which is being the big defender in the box and preventing stuff from getting in. He's been playing really well, so I'm hoping that we're seeing the Daxo that you mentioned last season, and Rob mentioned this too, that you know maybe this is the guy that turns into what Dortmund thought he could be if he's just a little bit healthy here. So
yeah. I think he can get there, and I want to be clear. I have super high hopes for Daxo. I believe he can be there just from what we're seeing right now. Still too many little mental mistakes, and we are getting nitpicky, to be totally fair. But yeah, if we're going to be playing super high level football every weekend, and where one goal could be the difference between success and disaster, you know, Daxo's a guy that makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, I think he's still the weak link on the defensive end, which is fine. He was wanted to be a backup last year, and now he's starting, and we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he plays against some of the upper level teams that have a little bit more pace. That's where I always get a little bit worried with him. And this gets into a question that Kay asks. Kay says, what do you think? Silas, in my opinion, needs a break. Last two games weren't his best. Would he contribute more coming off the bench? I've got two views of this. One is, I actually think he played fantastic in this last match. And in the second half, from the 45th minute to about the 75th minute before he got pulled, he was destroying the Darmstadt defenders. They couldn't handle him, and they were fouling him like crazy. But this does bring up an interesting point, is with Wagnermann, with Leveling, with Undav, Mittelstadt, there's a lot of players out there. Do you bench Silas at this point, or do you leave him out there for his 65, 70 minutes?
I don't think you can bench him right now. I do think that Silas's strongest position is as a 60th minute sub, when the defense is tired and utilize his speed. But also, he's not slowing down in the 50th, 60th minute yet. So I say let him run until something shows you that you should do otherwise.
I'm on your side. I mean, that defensive play he made to stop the run that Darmstadt had, I think showed me that he's all in to play. And I do think he's opening up lanes for Chris and for Seyru to have opportunities. He's not getting that pass yet. He's not getting that goal yet. So I would leave him out there and make Joshua, Leveling, Undav. I love Undav, by the way, earn, you know, their spots out there. So we do have that lineup, but we do have a big match coming up, which, you know what, you want to dive into it?
Let's go.
All right, so part four, this is it, folks. We've got an away match at Cologne. I'm super excited personally because this is the first watch party in Cleveland we're going to have. But I'm also excited because we're playing Cologne, which is probably a club I have a soft spot, you know, for. There was a joke at some point where the Billy Goats seemed to be the only team that we could beat, right? We beat them in Texas. We beat them with a Legendo match. It was Bruno's first win, where Gil Dias, Borna Sosa, Tengai, guys, none of which are with the club anymore. They all played a big role in. I have a soft spot for these guys. They are in trouble. They are, what are they, 16th place on the table, one point. They only have 4 goals this season. Two things, Matt. General thoughts on the Billy Goats, and then specific thoughts going into this match.
I also have a soft spot for the Billy Goats. I love the commitment to the Hennes mascot. Their fans always seem cool and fun and willing to have a little banter without getting too worked up. Somebody in Ann Arbor, Michigan has an FSA license plate that I've seen. Would love to sit down and have a beer with that person. So I have no ill will toward Colm. I also hope we beat the brakes off.
It's bizarre because Jeff, who was on the podcast, I texted, he wasn't able to be on tonight. And I asked him, I was like, hey, what is your thoughts on it going to this match? And he said, quote, I'll bet my wife we get relegated. Win-win. Stuttgart wins by three. Also, I hate Seiru. If you don't remember, 5 years ago, Seiru played for Cologne in the year they got relegated. And he had a rough year and he was shipped off to France, you know, after that. Like you said, the Henna supporters are awesome. They're probably the biggest widespread fan base in the entire United States. They just had their watch party in Washington, D.C., and Phil Bonney, you know, shouted them out during the match where they unfortunately lost to Bremen there. All told, this is will be the 103rd match between us. The Endo match was the 100th match, by the way, which kind of wild that happened. Valbe is 6 wins in the last 10 of these and 2 draws. Balham asks a great question. Would only getting a point on the road be considered a failure?
It would be disappointing given the start Colin is off to. I wouldn't call it a failure. I'm expecting we're going to get a couple matches here where we're only going to get 1 point or we're going to lose a close game. And just something's going to happen weird and it's not going to break our way. We've been incredibly fortunate so far. So it's bound to happen sooner or later. I don't feel like Köln is the likely team to make it happen to us right now because they're just, like, as you said, they're in trouble right now.
I watch a lot of their matches. They're very Darmstadt-like. They just don't have anything to threaten you, but their pace... They run like crazy. They're going to press like crazy. They're never going to give up. So it's going to be a very Darmstadt-like match where we are going to be up against it because they're not going to concede. They're going to go at us. That's the way that their coach Baumgart plays. But I think Baumgart's question is actually a really interesting one because a point on the road, especially for a club like ours, is a good thing. It's a good thing. But I will I will be disappointed if we only get a point in this one. And how crazy is that for you and I to be like, you know, there are some matches where we'll only get a point.
It's a big shift from where we were 6 months ago.
Yeah, it didn't take long for us to become elitist at this point, did we? Bob, I will be disappointed, even though that's probably not a terrible result. Cologne plays hard. And you know what? It's going to be interesting to see what happens. So, Matt, we put you on the spot every week. Put you on the spot once again. What do you think the odds makers have it? It's Stuttgart traveling to Cologne on Saturday. What do you got?
So I think since we're the visitors, we're only going to get a goal. Or I guess it'd be Stuttgart minus one, right? They'd give Cologne a goal to start with because they're at home. But we're averaging 3.5 goals per game right now, and they have 4 all season. So I could even see them giving Cologne 2 goals. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a pick'em right now, which...
For real?
Yeah, I know. That's exactly what Jeff said. That's exactly, he's like, he's pick'em, and then he stopped texting me. Yeah, it's a pick'em in this one. Now, they do have Schweba, who's an amazing goalkeeper who always plays really well against us. But we've got a striker who's in form. We've got a team that's in form. We've got a team that we're playing that is struggling like crazy. I'll start off on this one. We haven't scored less than 3 goals in any of our wins. I say we get another 3. I think I'm saying 3-0 for the good guys in this one. What about you?
I'm with you. 3. I could even 4 would not be a surprise. Just the Silas is due to break open. Milo has been on point. Furich has been on point. Jirasi's been unstoppable. Like, what's Köln going to be able to throw at these guys to stop all of them?
It will be interesting to see what Seiru's reception is there, because I don't know what the memories of the Cologne faithful are. There was a funny tweet that was sent out about his highlights from Cologne, and it was just a slap stick every miss you could think of video of like 6 or 7 opportunities he had that he Martin Harnicked into nowhere. So it'll be interesting to see what the fan base is going to do and how they're going to treat him there. But I don't know, it's hard not to be optimistic right now. It's hard not to think we're not going to get, you know, at least a point or 3 points out of this one. But I'm optimistic. Am I crazy?
I'm feeling positive. I'm right there with you.
Oh, you're crazy too then, huh?
Incredibly. So let's go.
Let's do it. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. If you're showing up to the watch party on Saturday in Cleveland, hopefully you'll be crazy there too. Matt, it was awesome talking to you again. And hopefully we can have another crazy talk after another big Valpy win, this time at the road in Cologne. Oh, that rhymed. How about that?
Well done, sir.
Talk to you next week, buddy.